I'd like to welcome everyone to the work session for the City Council meeting of November 7th, 2023. Everyone is present and accounted for. Our first item is a presentation discussion regarding active transportation, sidewalk standards, bike lanes, and scooters. Karen Baxter.
Hello. So there was a question posed by Councilmember Knowlton about our current sidewalk standards. We've been doing a bunch of work on a lot of these kind of topics, and they all kind of roll together. So we're hopeful that this will be educational and informational, and that we could also get some feedback on direction you'd like us to go. So the old sidewalk standard was 4-foot sidewalk, 4-foot park strip. Property line was about a foot behind sidewalk. Our current standard is for a 4-foot sidewalk with a 5-foot park strip, and property line is directly at back of sidewalk. The snip of the engineering diagram there shows you what that looks like. The photograph is one that's a standard 4-foot, 4-foot. That's really typical in our city. Now, the ADA requirement currently is a minimum of a 5-foot width for the sidewalk. You can have only a 3-foot sidewalk width as long as you provide a passing area every 200 feet. Driveways and other flat-ish locations qualify as those passing spaces. So we're not technically non-compliant, but we don't meet the requirements for grants and for government funding. And that's a change. So they have to be 5 feet wide. Yeah, sorry. And so, for example, our most recent grant application for the STIP funding, the TAP funding, and the TIF funding, all of those are through the Transcom group. We did an application, and they sent it back and said, looks great, but your sidewalk's got to be 5 feet. So kind of the technical considerations that we're looking at are meeting the ADA standards. We looked at what the UDOT standards are. They do have a 4-foot minimum on their sidewalk, and they call it a 5-foot desirable width. Minimum park strips, 4-foot, and they provide some standard details that we don't have, such as how do you do a sidewalk that wraps around a drive approach for adjacent sidewalks. So we've identified some things that we need to update and do some additional details and work on. So what we're looking at are some new sidewalk standards potentially. So we're looking in the categories for replacing sidewalk. We would recommend we continue to match those existing conditions. For a new sidewalk, we'd like to do a 5-foot sidewalk, a 4-foot minimum park strip, with a preferred 5-foot park strip. It's typically a good idea in most residential ribbon sidewalks for the sidewalk and the park strip to kind of match. And then for new sidewalk, we'll also do a sidewalk width by zone so that it can vary in depth. Then we'll do a mixed-use path or sidewalk with a width of 8 to 12 feet, and that again is defined by location.
Can you elaborate on the sidewalk width by zone?
What is yes. That? So if it's okay, it's 3 slides away. Okay. This was an overview, brief introduction. So this is our existing sidewalk inventory. So this map doesn't identify locations that we are planning to put sidewalk. The blue is everywhere we have existing sidewalk, and the red is everywhere that we don't have sidewalk. This map, as you can see, needs some updating. There's some sidewalk that's been installed that isn't shown, and we haven't added the streets in the annexation area yet. So in preparing for this, we realized that we need to get some updates on here. It's a lot easier to see a little zoomed in. You can see, for example, on Eagle Ridge Drive, the south side of the street is red, the north side of the street is blue. There is no sidewalk on the south side, nor is it really needed. So this is the inventory, not necessarily the plan. But what we do is we track all the locations that sidewalk exists and areas that don't have sidewalk. That makes it fairly simple for us to then identify target locations where sidewalk needs to be added in the future. So for replacement sidewalk, we're going to match the existing conditions. If you look at the photograph, you can see those couple of white squares where there's new sidewalk. You can tell by the different color. And the problem, of course, is that typically sidewalk replacement is done one square or two squares or three squares at a time. If we do 4 or 8 or 12 feet of sidewalk and we make it wider to match an updated standard, then we get the problems that are occurring in that bottom picture. This photograph is actually what was done at a town in Texas. And due to budget constraints, they replaced existing wide sidewalk that was damaged with replacement narrower sidewalk. We think it's a really unsafe condition and a trip hazard. And so even though our new standard would be 5 feet, all of the existing sidewalk replacement will continue to be put in at 4. So for new sidewalk, particularly in residential areas, we're recommending a minimum 5-foot sidewalk width. This does create some, we've got to take into account the right-of-way widths. Right now we have 9 feet from back of curb to property line. So if we have a 5-foot park strip and a 4-foot sidewalk now, a 5-foot sidewalk leaves us with a 4-foot park strip, which is not necessarily desirable, but that allows us to work within the existing right-of-way, which is why we have a 4-foot minimum. Now, if we don't want to work with a smaller park strip, we've come up with a couple of alternatives. Alternative one would be to create a 4-foot sidewalk with passing zones. And this is kind of a detail that shows how those passing zones work. So about every 200 feet, we would need a bump out in the sidewalk. It has to be a minimum of a 5x5 square. Those could push towards the street instead of towards the yards. The benefit of this is that we would not minimize the park strip width, and we can work within the existing right-of-way. It's a little obtrusive to have it coming in and out in these random locations, but it solves the problems. The second alternative would be to increase the right-of-way width. And in this idea, we would have a 5-foot park strip, 5-foot sidewalk, which maintains that nice park strip width. So the intent for this would be primarily new roads. There aren't any new roads currently in the works, but someday someone's going to redevelop something. If we do this on an existing road, it may or may not have a right-of-way width that would accommodate this kind of infrastructure, and then we'd need to do either property acquisition or find a different solution. So there is, Sherry added this slide on me.
Okay.
I'm like, I don't know what that is. So this is the sidewalk by zone with the varying widths.
Can I ask a quick question while
Absolutely.
This is happening? Can you help me understand the reasons why we would prioritize a wider park strip versus a 4 to 5 foot difference in the park strip?
Ultimately, that's the guidance I'm looking for back from you. If you would prioritize a wider park strip, so we're saying we feel strongly that we need to create a standard of a 5-foot sidewalk in order to meet the requirements as explained. That leaves us with a 4-foot park strip.
Why would I care if we have a 4-foot park strip? Just help me know, what are my decision-making criteria here?
I think the desirability of tree space and having that buffer zone between pedestrian safety and vehicles, I think it's kind of more aesthetic than anything else necessarily. But there is some and always will be conflicting. You know, do you want a wider sidewalk? Do you want a wider park strip? And you may not feel strongly.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. Those were the ideas that I had, but I'm aware I might not have them all.
Okay.
Can I also ask a quick question? When you talk about replacement sidewalks matching existing conditions, is there an option to, when you put in a replacement sidewalk, also add that passing zone every 200 feet? Because to me, that sounds like a win-win.
There is, and the reason that we're not planning on doing that universally, you know, the whole city, is because the driveways in most locations would accommodate that passing zone. So the additional drive or sidewalk width by zone, the idea behind this, so this is an example table that was published by another city. So Basically, what we do is instead of having a standard number that's a minimum, and then we negotiate or we tell people, oh, but we want a 7-foot sidewalk here or a 6-foot sidewalk, the intent would be to create a standard that's best suited for the type of use and the location within the city. And it doesn't necessarily have to be our zoning, commercial, you know, residential, R112, et cetera. It would be a sidewalk zone. So, for example, we could, in this location, they've got an urban neighborhood and an urban neighborhood connector and an arterial. So we may say sidewalks along Redwood Road or sidewalks in the town center, which we are. We can also identify major streets, locations with wider, for example, 900 North and Redwood. There's a much larger open space. That area could accommodate a larger sidewalk. And the idea would be that this table becomes adopted as a standard with a published zone map, and then new development in those areas would then comply with those wider sidewalks. So kind of the overall notes or things that would be indicated in addition to just sidewalk width would be the frontage of the setback, the pedestrian walking space, the furnishings location. For those of us who aren't planners, furnishings are not furniture, but that would be benches, trash cans, trees, power poles, etc. And then if required, a landscaping or vegetated buffer area that could also be a minimum width location. So this would be something that we're proposing to develop. We don't have numbers that we're proposing. But if this is something that seems, we think this is a great idea. What we'd like to do is develop some recommendations to bring to City Council for adoption. And that would be based on these zone ideas. And we may only have 3 or 4, but we think that this gives us significantly better flexibility to have the correct standards put in place as construction occurs over time. I'm off. So then we also have a mixed-use path or sidewalk. So a mixed-use path we have in multiple locations. We have one along Redwood Road on the west side. We have one on the south side of Center Street. We have them in several of our city parks. They're typically asphalt, and they can be used by bikes, people, strollers, roller skaters, whatever. We also are looking for a mixed-use sidewalk, which would be a more urban environment. They're going to typically be concrete. They may have some mixed materials. But those would be for commercial areas and for redevelopment. And this is something Sherry and I have been working on. So if you look at like the bottom two pictures, the intent here is to provide an area in the town center or the commercial areas that allow us to kind of designate these wider sidewalk locations and what the uses for them are. So lots of terms come up, and they come up throughout. So they're mixed use. They're also multi-use paths, shared use paths, or shared paths. It's all kind of the same idea.
Karen, is this an alternative idea to the zone approach?
No, this is a different, so the zone approach would be specific to sidewalk use, although some of these identifiers and the distances are part of that table as well. But in some areas, the zone approach would simply be 6-foot sidewalk, 6-foot park strip, and that's all that's there because there is no multi-use path effect to it. Some of it's just sidewalk.
So something like, you know, look at the image on the lower left or mm-hmm. lower right. There's this question of where does the AT plan or where would we want to have active transportation accommodation? Mm-hmm. And so that would not be through a zone approach. That would
Correct.
Be through, we would identify those routes, and
yes.
those routes would then lead to a mixed-use path
yes.
kind of designation.
Exactly correct. Okay, so the, it's not working, Wendy. Okay, so kind of what we're working on right now is exactly what Council Member Knowlton just asked, where do we identify these locations? So currently, we're working on a corridor agreement for the U.S. Highway 89 with UDOT. That work is we're trying to define cross-sections and a map so that we can determine the needed right-of-way. In working on these cross-sections, what we've identified is that we need to include all the transportation features, so that will include the BRT, which is coming. It will also include bike routes and or bike lanes. It will include pedestrian access and, of course, We're specifically looking for vehicular traffic and how the cars work and how the lanes work. So our cross-section is going to vary by location, but our right-of-way width really does not. But the needs are different in different parts of town. So we're looking kind of the combination of the lane width and the active transportation and the pedestrian access. So on the north side of town, from 350 North to about 10th North, we're looking at a multi-use path or trail on the west side of the road. So right now we have that greenbelt space. There's a fairly small asphalt path and a fairly small concrete sidewalk that run parallel to each other through that entire space. What we'd like to do is transfer that to a multi-use path that would be 10 or 12 feet wide. And the intent would be to keep both of all of the active transportation, all of the bikes, all of the scooters, everybody off the road on the west side of Highway 89 for that corridor that already exists. And then in the center, what we're calling the town center area, we're looking for a mixed-use approach. The idea behind that is that we'll have wider sidewalks. They'll be concrete. It's much more of this urban design, and the intent would be to utilize that space similar to those cross-section profiles where there's a pedestrian space and a furnishings area and a bike lane. In this location, we're looking for a true mixed use where they're not designated bikes to the right, people to the left, more like a downtown where scooters go where they need to go, as do pedestrians. In this photograph, this is across the street at our town center, city center, I apologize. And there are the existing white sidewalks. There is passing space. So the intent would be if a bike was coming and pedestrians were working, there's plenty of room for people to avoid each other where they're coming and going. The intent is for this area to continue to grow. From the town center to the south end of the city, we're then moving that active transportation to the east side of the road to connect to the commuter trail that goes down to Salt Lake City. The belief is that will be vastly improved by the new I-15 work, and that commuter trail eventually will find a better home through the Beck Street area. But by moving that active transportation from the west side on the north of town through the city center to the west side to the east side on the south part of town, we're moving people across those locations at signalized intersections. And that we already have trails and open space, so we're not defining a new corridor. We're also looking at the Center Street development. So we had a plan come in for 130 East Center. They have proposed bulb out parking and on-street parking within the city right-of-way and looking at wide sidewalks and commercial frontages. We are currently working on design for a sidewalk that runs along Center Street from this development up to Orchard. We have an existing grant that should be constructed in the summer of 2024. Combining this work together, what we are looking at is the idea of moving a separated bike lane up behind that on-street parking, because the on-street parking precludes the existing bike lane that's there. So these are kind of a hodgepodge of pictures, but the bottom left kind of shows the profile we're talking about, where we have two lanes of traffic, eastbound and westbound, and then we'll have a parking width, and then the bike lane will be up behind the curb. So this the center picture at the bottom shows kind of the intent, the bike lane that's coming up from the light on US 89 Center past the gas station would have a designated, indicated ramp to get up behind the curb before the parking starts, before the first bulb out. Likely trees out in those bulb outs rather than in the furnishings area so that we don't decapitate anybody. And kind of the idea of that lower right picture or the one just above it where there are designated locations, furnishings in between, and they're not a mixed use. It's a bike lane behind the curb and then pedestrians up against the commercial frontage. Our intent would be to take this same profile all the way up to Orchard. So what this really all leads us to is active transportation. So we've been talking about it just can't be separated. They all work together. So we're looking at the Orchard Drive bike pilot. And the previous recommendation or plan had been that we were going to do a temporary bike lane pilot. We were going to put some orange candlesticks up. We were going to have a preset time frame of perhaps 60 days. We would then have a kickoff event. We would track the usage, and we'd see whether or not we could increase or how much this would work with this protected or separated kind of protected bike lane. So the plans, some public outreach, some social media, you know, try and get some buy-in from the residents. We really wanted to connect this to some kind of destination. So we looked at the potential of connecting to the commuter trail to Salt Lake City by providing a bypass down by the Eagle Ridge roundabout so that we could, because once you're past there, then there's existing bike lane the rest of the way south. Potentially working with Bountiful or Woods Cross to connect to the Bountiful Library, connect to the Rec Center, and possibly to the Front Runner Station of Woods Cross. So while we still love all of the ideas of the destination, we'd like to present kind of a new plan. What I'd like to suggest we do instead is doing a buffered bike lane. And rather than identifying no parking, painting the curbs red, convincing all the residents, it's really not that big of a deal, you're going to be fine. What we'd like to do is an approach where the test or the pilot study is whether or not we can adequately change people's behavior by a positive change to the environment and having it properly signed. So what we'd like to do is create a buffered bike lane. We want minimal paint application as far as the biking goes, and the reason for that is we want to still be able to maintain our asphalt. We want to still be able to do our asphalt preservation program. And paint becomes pretty expensive, and the full lane green dedicated bike lanes is tremendously expensive. So for a pilot, at least, what we'd like to do is create a very clear designated bike lane. The idea would be bike lane signs. We would add some application of green paint. So on the very bottom, we're considering adding a green stripe of paint all the way along the edge of the buffer, so it'll look kind of like the top picture with the addition of this green stripe along the edge. What that will do is make it very different than a standard shoulder stripe, and the white and the green next to each other are significantly more eye-catching than either one alone. We'll then put up bike lane signs, not no parking signs, and the intent would be this is a bike lane, and here's bike lane signs and, you know, the entire distance. The pilot is to see whether or not, to monitor how many bicyclists are using it, whether or not people feel comfortable in a buffered bike lane versus a separated protected bike lane, and also monitor what happens with parking activity. So the idea would be, again, connected to somewhere through pilot programs if possible, to have a positive social media, to reach out to the homeowners and say, we're super excited, we're doing this bike lane, and not do it through enforcement. The benefit to this is that we can, if we choose, add no parking signs, do some other potential work, but then this is not a temporary investment. The bike lane's installed. And if we find it doesn't work from the pilot study, we can then make modifications to the plan or decide that we're not going to have a designated bike lane here. The intent is we have bike lanes all over town, and those white stripe, those white shoulder lines look like white shoulder lines. So if we identify specific locations that we're going to call designated bike lanes, for example, down 900 North in Foxborough on Orchard Drive and other locations as part of our active transportation plan, the intent would be to have a very visually distinct but minimally expensive addition to paint, green bike symbols, potentially green cross-hatching at intersections or areas. And the idea would be potentially, you can see in the top right where you've got the crosswalk locations where they provide that green, where that bike path crosses intersections. I would really, really like to test this out and see how it works with our residents. So based on that, we did a comparative budget. So previously, the temporary bike lane pilot with the candlesticks and some temporary signs, we were looking at a budget of around $25,000. The painted buffered bike lane For the actual construction for the signs with the posts and the paint on the ground would be about $22,200. Now I have a fun fact. Part of the reason I'm excited about this instead of a bunch of red curb and a bunch of enforcement is that in 2013, our annual street striping budget was $32,433. This year, our street striping budget was $131,671. That's a $100,000 increase in 10 years. Some of that is additional lane miles, additional striping, additional red curbing, but a lot of it's just the cost of work going up so significantly. So the least amount of paint we can use and have the desired effect, the more fiscally responsible I think that the application of that's going to be. And then I'll turn it over to Sherry.
Can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
Will you go back two slides to the images? Yeah. Right there. The image on the lower right that has the bike lane and then it has this cross-hatching. Mm-hmm. Do we have space to do that cross-hatching as well?
So it won't be as wide as that. It'll look more like the upper picture. So that is what a buffered bike lane looks like, is you have two white lines with the cross-hatching in between. And it's about a two-foot space what we're going to put in an orchard.
Okay, thanks.
Can I do another follow-up? What do you think about wider but on one side? In other words, instead of having buffered on both sides, mm-hmm. buffered on one side but wider, which would then just give a little bit more space separation mm-hmm. for bicyclists and also have the added benefit of not disrupting one side of the street. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that or if you want to think about it.
And we can definitely take a look. I think part of the reason we're wanting to do a pilot study is we want to see how people feel and whether or not it works. My preference from an engineering perspective would be to have the bike lanes go with traffic on either side of the street. There is a lot of precedent for combined bike lanes, but from what I've been able to find, it looks like those look like they're ideally suited for things that are truly separated or protected. Mm-hmm. versus something that's just buffered. We're strongly leaning towards and trying to find a way to make a buffered bike lane work because of the complications for our O&M, for snow plowing. Even the temporary pilot study with the orange candlesticks becomes problematic as far as operations and maintenance. If we've got public works going out there twice a day for 60 days to pick up the cones and put them back, it's a lot of time and manpower. And so, but that's, you are the expert and I am not. So we will definitely look into the idea of moving it to one side of the street, especially in areas where that seems like the most feasible.
I have a question maybe for Todd. In the private sector, the ADA laws can be rather strict. As a public entity, Do we have some immunity there? I'm going back to the sidewalks.
Yeah. So, I'm sorry, Todd, would you please address the immunity? I was just going to say the rule is if we do any street reconstruction, anything they consider anything, the definition, anything more than standard maintenance. So if we do a surface preservation treatment, such as a slurry seal, it does not trigger it. Any road work above that triggers the need to install ADA ramps. Technically, there is no exception. Many of our sidewalks have grades that are higher than an ADA sidewalk is allowed. Our streets are steeper than an ADA ramp can be. And as a result, there are rules that say you're supposed to lower the sidewalk, create a wrap around, do the kinds of things you would do like at a commercial facility. And those are not something that we attempt to comply with. We do our best to make the ramp locations meet all of the requirements.
And that's the way we advise our clients in terms of the major reconstruction or surface treatments, and particularly the sidewalks in heavily sloped areas.
So if we were constructing a new road today, we would absolutely have to put in 5-foot sidewalks. Is that the...
So ADA does allow for those passing zones.
Okay.
But the short answer is yes. If we do a new road, we absolutely need 5-foot sidewalks.
I have another question. again, this picture on the lower right that has this like white candlestick that looks like it's semi-permanent. Mm-hmm. Is that an option for us, or what problem does that present potentially for snow removal or anything like that?
Yeah, so we've looked at lane delineators, and the that is what changes it from a buffered bike lane to a separated,
I think it's protected.
They all have names that are not very logical to me. So this was actually what was intended, having delineators down, were actually what was originally intended for Orchard Drive in the master plan or the town center. Active transportation plan. And what we're looking to do is to alter that into a buffered bike lane based on feedback from Public Works and engineering into the study that was done by planning. I think the key to this is that the delineators create a lot of problems year-round. We have snow plows that in a snow event, they can't plow that area. So large cities and places with a lot of bikers and a lot of urban activity will have specialized equipment that will plow separated bike lanes, like we plow park paths or some sidewalk around the city. But trying to do, you know, several miles of bike lanes so that there are plastic delineators is really problematic. In addition, we won't be able to do street sweeping. And the problem with that becomes the reason people tend to ride as far left as possible out into the road is because all of the debris collects in the gutter and along the bike lane edge. And so our preference would be to increase the sweeping so that people can safely ride closer to the outside edge of the road. We think that that increases that buffer distance. There are realities to the visual impact and the safety that it brings, and those delineators definitely are the next step up, which is why we're proposing this as a pilot study and not the final plan that we're all bought in on, because we may then go back to, we've been looking at removable delineators that are capped in the road, and the delineator can be removed on street sweeping days and for wintertime potentially. That creates some problems with what do we do when we resurface the road and how do we seal it. Problems can all be fixed, but we're trying to figure out how well this works and whether or not we can get people to, you put a little green down and see what happens.
Let me give you just a couple of quick reactions, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
One is that I think that this is good. Well-logicked, is that a correct grammar, in as an alternative to a pilot. I agree with your sense on that. And look, we have a chicken and egg problem, right? We don't have a ton of bicycling on Orchard. We do have some. I was at the bus stop on Orchard and watched a few go by just while I was waiting this morning. So it's not nothing. But it's not a lot, frankly. And, you know, the chicken and egg is, well, maybe there's not a lot because people are concerned about their safety. And yet there's, you know, all these challenges that we've just talked about, but also including, you know, parking on the street. And so it's difficult to work through those things. So I think we have to start somewhere. I will also then say, this is my second and last point, and then I'll let you keep going, is that I'm frankly skeptical that people will look at a painted buffer and feel like, okay, I'm safe now. You know, I don't know that it's going to dramatically change the comfort level that people will have that would enable them to just do what they want to do, right? That we give them that real choice. However, I do actually think it is the right next step.
Can I ask a quick question? What's the current parking situation on Orchard Drive? Are both sides open for parking right now?
Yes.
Okay. I just had a question.
Okay. So one of the other things that we have on our action items was to report back about our Lime scooters that started this year. So if you remember, we approved the agreement with Lime Scooters back in February. They started deploying the end of April, first part of May. So we have about 6 months worth of data. And I got this data directly from Lime. And so they're showing in the time period through October 31st, we've had almost 3,000 total trips. The average trips are about a mile each. The average rental time is about 10 minutes. They deploy about 22 scooters a day in North Salt Lake. And it's some really nice total hours of operation. That 97,000 is pretty high. They have received 17 service complaints. I think one of the first ones that I heard of was somebody had left a scooter and it was on their front yard and had been there a couple days. So we just started connecting people with the customer service line so that they could report those and get those picked up. And then we had a question that was asked this morning from our staff that was wondering how the scooters work with the other cities. So they are geo-fenced at our north boundary. They have not reached an agreement with Woods Cross or with Bountiful City to put Lime scooters into their city, but they have an agreement with Salt Lake County and Salt Lake City, so they can go south. So you could get on a scooter in North Salt Lake and you could scooter it hypothetically all the way into downtown downtown Salt Lake City if you really wanted to. I contacted South Davis Metro Fire to find out if we'd had any scooter-related accidents that they had responded to. They don't have them categorized in a way that they can correlate that data. They had to do a word search, but they didn't find that the word scooter come up in any of their cases that they've had over this time period. We did have the police chief. He relayed that he thinks there was at least one scooter accident. It was a single operator accident in Hatch Park, and the operator may or may not have been distracted by a pretty girl. And he did not require a hospital transport. But this is, just to remind you of what the scooters look like. We did a little scooter tour here when we did the market study with our consultants, and we zipped around town, and that was really interesting to ride them and to see the places that we need some improvements in the sidewalks and the bike lanes. So I wanted to just go back and touch base on this 130 East idea. And this picture on the left is from our scooter tour, and it kind of gives you an idea of what we are thinking about with having the bike or the scooter lane against the curb with the parking there, and then having this furnishing zone in the middle, and maybe instead of street trees.
Sherry, can I stop just for a second? Yep. Because this picture goes to my question. At downtown Salt Lake City, and I don't blame scooter people because the road's pretty terrific, but it's illegal to ride these on sidewalks.
It is, yeah. And we can allow it if we want to. We can.
Well, that's my question, I guess, for the chief. Chief, would you enforce that on? Because the accidents I've seen, I mean, it's also terrifying to walk down a sidewalk and three scooters come by at 30 miles an hour. But I've seen people whipping up the sidewalk and people turning right, and there's no pedestrians, so they think they're free to go, and all of a sudden a scooter comes, and they end up getting hit. So it's kind of we're trying to mix different transportations on, and the bottom line is that I don't think scooters belong on the sidewalks. But what do you think, Chief?
Well, I agree, but I also don't think they belong on Highway 89. And so
they just don't
the
belong.
Answer is, Mayor and Council, sidewalks. If you pass an ordinance that says not on sidewalks, yes, we will enforce that. But I think that there's more, that's just not a black or white policy decision for you.
Sure. And I think of Highway 89, there's not a lot of foot traffic on the sidewalk. Yeah, but.
And with our town center cross section, if we increase those sidewalk widths like we were talking and developing to have a 8 to 10 foot sidewalk, there would be more room for that. So this was the idea with this idea for 130 East, that instead of having the street trees against the curb, we would actually move that furnishing zone in between the pedestrian zone, which would be against the building, And then instead of having street trees, we would have like the planter boxes like that are similar to what we have across the street here, and some benches. And then the pedestrian zone would be against the building. So pretend like those stairs aren't there and it was a sidewalk down. But just this visually kind of gives you an idea that bikes and scooters could possibly use that bike lane on the sidewalk, and then the pedestrians could walk on the other side of the planters against the building.
So is that's a mixed-use path?
Yes.
Situation, and so that would be not a sidewalk legal. I mean, we could define it as this is...
We would define that area
typical sidewalk,
as for
illegal,
bicycles
on a mixed-use path, legal.
Yeah, for bicycles and for scooters could use that path. So that was kind of my idea, that we would look at that in certain locations where we would allow scooters in sidewalks, and maybe it ties into the zones, but it's definitely could be allowed in some locations. So we wanted to see if that was an idea that you wanted us to pursue with the developer. He's working on revising his proposal to the Planning Commission and planning on going to the Planning Commission in 3 weeks. And so this was an idea that he wanted some feedback. Yes, the developer at 130 East Center Street. So if this is something that you would like them to explore, obviously there are some changes that might have to be made. They may have to move the buildings back a couple feet. We kind of did a little calculation, Karen and I. And the final surveying and engineering isn't done because we're still at that general development plan is what they're trying to amend, so kind of the concept plan. But we kind of did a little analysis, and we think they have to move the building back about 2.5 feet to make something like this work on Center Street. And if that's something that you feel like we should at least explore with them, we're happy to do that. And I will provide feedback to the developer on that. If you have any comments or you want to comment.
I have a question. Will you go back to the last slide?
Yes.
This map of the city that has the green and yellow drop pins, what do those represent?
So those were the locations where they were going to target to deploy scooters to see if people rode them from those locations. And so they have two ways of deploying them. They have their locations that they target, and then they have locations where through the app somebody's requested a scooter be in this area, so they know that people are looking for scooters in specific areas, and then they target deployment in those areas. But this was the start. That was the starting map for ideas of places where they could test their deployment.
I would love to know if they have this information, where they're getting used in the city, if they really are all targeted in one area or if it's spread out across the city.
Yes, I believe they do have that, and I can get that for you.
I have two quick comments. The first is regarding scooters. I'm pretty sure my neighborhood uses them. I also know that in my neighborhood, they get parked in the bike lane. So maybe we could talk about not doing that. Because could you just imagine having to go out into the cars because there's scooters in the bike lane? And then about the second thing with the 130 East development, I would love to have them consider that multi-use sidewalk trail area.
I think it would be a good test case for an urban location for that cross section.
I support that idea as well. Can I do one stray comment that I had before you go into this component?
Yes.
And it is about the Highway 89 trail idea, which I really like. And it, you know, it makes sense that on the north you got to go on the west side, and it makes sense on the south you got to go on the east side. I get it. And then, you know, I think Karen, you talked about how that necessitates you got to cross the road. Well, that's got to be elevated, and maybe you're already doing this in your conversations with UDOT. That's got to be part of the way we talk about the intersection. Wherever that's going to happen, but I presume that's Center Street.
Yeah, to help accommodate those crossings.
The movement from the west to the east side. And so that's got to be part of the conversation of the safety of that intersection.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. Okay, so moving on to give you update on our general plan. So the RFP went out today. It's been published on the state website. We will be having a pre-submittal meeting on the 14th. We have a list of contractors that we got from WFRC and some that had contacted us that knew we were going to do a general plan update and asked to be notified. That will just be a question and answer discussion where they can ask us any questions in preparation for their proposal. Proposals are planned to be due on December 15th with our staff reviewing them on December 18th. If there isn't a clear consultant that we want to hire, we would plan to narrow it down to two and then have them make presentations much like we did with the Hatch Park proposals, and then have a recommendation to you on your second meeting in January. So that's your general plan update. So I wanted to talk just a little bit about the Town Center urban design and my favorite word now, form-based code.
Can I ask a question about the general plan update? Mm-hmm. I only brought this up last time, so it might not have gotten into some of these deeper discussions, but I would really love in the general plan for there to be a new section on health and wellness. Do you know if that is part of the proposal?
So I haven't included that as specifically, but I know that that is, it was mentioned to me. And so I know that we're going to look into that and see where it would be appropriate, because I think we do address health and wellness in a lot of the different areas like active transportation. So I'm not really sure how to key it in, but I figure that when we get with the consultant that we can figure where the best place is to do that. Because I want to do a little more research on what the best approach would be to that.
Great, thank you.
That's a great idea.
Okay, so as we've been trying to do the form-based code the last few years, I think the conclusion that the staff has come to is that the template maybe just isn't the right fit or scale for North Salt Lake. When we have such a narrow corridor with very narrow, they're not very deep lots for redevelopment, and they're right up against single family homes. When we're talking about the form-based code and these 6 and 7 story buildings without any transitioning zone, I think it's been very difficult for us to figure out how to make it work, because we're not the experts. We're not experts in form-based codes. We're not expert in what the right setback should be, or what the right building massing should be, or what the right height should be. And so while these form-based codes, I think, are working somewhat in South Salt Lake and in Clearfield, even Clearfield, when they did the use the template, they actually had to go back out and hire a consulting firm to come in. They spent $75,000 to rework their form-based code so that it fit into their the dynamic that they have in the city. And so what we would like to do is, and we've talked about that, is to have some urban design guidelines drafted and work with a consultant on that. And also, because we've had a little bit of community pushback when we had the 5 and 6 story buildings proposed on the 130 East site. And so that kind of felt like a foreboding thing for the town center and a form-based code. And so why we want to do this is because we want to get an architectural consultant who has the expertise, who can give us recommendations on siding and blocks and massing recommendations on the height of buildings, the building articulation, the pedestrian spaces, and the materials and colors from experts. So we have submitted a letter of interest for a TLC grant with WFRC. We received the invitation to apply, so they have given us the green light that it is a project that would qualify for funding, and the application is due by December 7th, and hopefully that will be awarded in the summer of 2024. What would we be looking to get as deliverables would be some architectural design guidelines, some site-specific demonstrations. So I've been doing some research on design guidelines for other cities, and one of the great things that I've seen in them is that they've done these site demonstrations. They've actually taken an actual block that, or an actual piece of property in the city that they were writing the guidelines for, and they did a development practice and showed how it would be massed and what size the building should be. And it I think it would really solve our hesitation in the redevelopment along Highway 89, because we're just not really sure what size those buildings should be and what they should look like.
Do we have any kind of connections or anything that, with W?
We might.
We could lobby or put pressure on or anything?
I'm just not going to say anything more. But the other part about this, with the, and then we would be wanting to get a deliverable to get some town center zone district regulations that we can actually put into code. And the advantage of doing it at this time would be because we will have started the general plan update and the visioning exercises, and we can match the town center to the vision for the vision updates that come through the general plan. We'll make sure that we're right on track with the citizens' vision for what our town center should be and how it should be redeveloped.
So I presume that, I'm just clarifying, I think you are saying, look, these will be codified, they'll be numeric, we can administer them ourselves, we don't need an architect, and that a developer or a landowner, when they look at them, they know what they mean for their development.
Yes, okay. That's exactly what we're hoping for.
And did I hear you right that because form-based code doesn't fit with our geographic layout, we're not using that? We're going to use this urban
design?
That's
what we would like to do, yes.
Okay.
That's what we're proposing.
I really like this idea because I was neck deep in the form-based code 4 years ago when I was on Planning Commission. But I have a concern about the area continuing to develop while we wait for these standards. I know that because of the current economic conditions, maybe that's not a problem, but is there a way to put some kind of moratorium on development along the town center lines while we wait for this to come back?
If we decided to do that, that moratorium could only last for 180 days. So we would have to be very careful about the timing of that. And it also would not affect anything that already had an application in process. So it would not apply to the 130 East project. Even if you passed a moratorium at your very next meeting, it would not apply to that development because they're already in process. And it wouldn't apply to any that we have development agreements with already too. So just to make that very clear. I think if we started to sense we were getting some pressure on some major redevelopment, then we maybe want to consider that. But we want to be really careful with the timing so that we make sure we have enough time if we do a moratorium to actually get ordinances in place that do what we want. So just to wrap up all of the things that Karen and I have been talking to you about today is I wanted to bring you up to speed on the additional collaboration and how all of these things are being brought together. So we are working on the subdivision ordinance update. That will be before you in January of 2024. The Planning Commission has been having work sessions every meeting on at least one or two chapters of the subdivision ordinance. Next week, they're meeting on Chapter 9, which is the last chapter. Then we will bring together all of the other changes that have to happen where we're moving subdivision regulations out of Title 10 and putting them into Title 13, and it kind of leaves some holes, so we got to patch those sections back up. And then, and things that we're putting in there are these street right-of-way widths and are these sidewalks and trails and these various ideas. So we're trying to be collaborative and cover everything in our subdivision ordinance to bring those up to speed. We're also planning is working closely with engineering on the development of a capital facilities plan for the active transportation implementation, because we have a lot of great projects in there and you adopted that plan, but we need to know what priorities those implementations and those projects should take, as well as when and how they'll be funded. And so we want to develop that capital facilities plan, bring it back to you and say, here's all the projects that are recommended. This is the priority that we think they should be installed. This is maybe some changes that we might want to make to the plan as we go through and decide if they're feasible or not, or how much they're going to cost, those types of constraints that we have. And then get that implemented so that we can look at it and we know, okay, this side path is going to be constructed in 2026, or this one's going to be done in 2028. And we have a plan just like we have with our our streets and our other capital facilities. And then, of course, then integrating all of these profiles and standards into our specification manuals and our ordinances. And so this is a big project, has a lot of moving parts, but I hope that you know that we're working really closely with all of our other departments, with public safety and with public works, to make sure that we're addressing their concerns as well as the engineering concerns and the social concerns that the planning department have, because we're just trying to make a better built environment for everyone. And do you have any more questions?
I have a question first. Thank you. This is so impressive and exciting, and the level of foresight and insight and collaboration is really impressive. This is an adjacent topic with sidewalks and trails. Can you remind me about sidewalk repair responsibilities? What is the city's responsibility? What are homeowners' responsibilities when a sidewalk in front of their home needs a repair? Particularly, I'm asking because in Foxborough, where there's been a requirement to have trees in the park strip, and a lot of those trees have grown in such a way that roots are displacing the sidewalk throughout the entire space.
I think Ken has the answer for that.
I would love to know that. Anything about that?
So, generally speaking, homeowners have that responsibility to make repairs. I think that, and this is an issue that we need to bring back to the council, I don't think that we have a solid policy as a city right now for those situations where trees are damaging sidewalks. We know where they are. They need to be fixed. But we need to have more discussion as a council as to what you want to do about that.
I would love to have that conversation. Yep. And then just speaking from my interactions in the Health and Wellness Committee and also on the Senior Lunch Bunch, these are topics. Sidewalk repair is a specific topic that has come up as a mobility active transportation issue, particularly for seniors in the city, and that they've requested the city invest in making sure sidewalks are usable for that population.
Yep, that's on our list. In fact, it's on our action item list.
Thank you. Let's take a break and we'll reconvene in 5.5 minutes.